Good afternoon and welcome into another hour of Woods and Water, South Carolina. My name, if you don't know by now, is Roger Metz, and you're listening to 94.5 WGTK, The Answer in Greenville. And yes, it's hot and muggy. We knew it was coming. If you have been in South Carolina for any more than, 9 months, you know what summertime is like around here. It's forewarned. It's hot and muggy and humid. And, of course, all this tropical moisture doesn't help. Hey, you know, there's good things. We needed the rain, maybe not in such a short amount of time. But, you know, you don't have to look back too far when Hartwell was down 8-9 feet all year long. And you learn to appreciate a little bit of rain every once in a while. Hopefully not too many people's basements flooded like mine did just for a moment there. It is great. Today is National Trails Day. I'll tell you, it's just busy. I got squeezed between Lincoln, Nebraska and Memorial Day last week and forgot to mention National Trails Day as much as I would have liked to. But, yeah, it's National Trails Day. If you hadn't been out so far, you still got a few hours in the day. And really, look, it doesn't take – you don't have to do this one day a year. You know, this is just the day that everybody puts emphasis on it. And it's interesting. Here in South Carolina, we actually have a website. It is called South Carolina Trails. The website is sctrails.net. And back up to the front page. And it's, you know, it's just got a pretty good logo here. And welcome to South Carolina Trails, your base for adventure. And you search for trails or find trails, either one. And it just starts a list. It's a map of the state, and it's loading at the moment. I'm sorry. Do we all spend our whole lives watching the little thing on our computers go round and round? Well, at least this one's not a continuous circle. This is like dots. But it's loading. There we go. Okay. So it pops up with a map of South Carolina. Just has dots all over the state. And then it just – here's the first one, 6 and 20 connector, number 22. So I guess if you go on the map – and look for number 22. There's number 22. It's right down there above Anderson. Yeah, and you go back over here, and it looks. It says trail activity, hiking, length 0.1 miles. Difficulty, easy. The 6 and 20 connector is a short and easy trail that connects the Pinnacle Pass and Rim of the Gap trails, which are located in the Mountain Bridge Wilderness area. Pretty cool. Then the next one down, Ace Basin Greenway. Now, it's... Okay, you can hike on it, you can bike on it, and it's got a baby stroller. So evidently the trail is good enough to push your baby stroller around in. It's 1.8 miles in length. The difficulty is easy. And the little description here is the Ace Basin Greenway is a nature path along South Carolina Highway 303 that follows an old Atlantic Coast Railroad bed, which is why you can push your stroller down it and runs underneath a beautiful piney wood canopy. Excellent for exercise. And if you, let's click on the Ace Basin Greenway. And it takes me actually to the page, and it's got a map, and it goes from Ashapoo Crossing to Green Pond on the Ace Basin Highway. The Ace Basin Greenway goes back. The trail is ideal for walking, biking, general exercise, and bird watching. It's a flat path comprised of a dirt concrete base built on the old elevated rail bed. You can park at the trailhead on Folly Creek Lane at the intersection of South Carolina Highway 303 and Folly Creek. The trailhead is on a three-acre tract of land, which has been an 18-car parking area on a gravel base. Several picnic tables, trash receptacle. There are no restrooms or water stations currently at this site. How cool. So you've got that at your fingertips on your computer, and it's as simple as clicking an icon on the map or just scrolling down to figure out what you where you want to go. I would recommend staying away from the low country for the next couple of months. You might could fit in one in the next couple of weeks down there, but after that, you know, the mosquito's going to carry you away. And the snakes are going to be out, and the spiders going to... I'm sorry. I don't mean to discourage you. I don't like summer woods too much myself. I'm not the tallest guy in the bunch, but in my family, I'm the tallest one, so I'm one out front clearing all the spider webs as we walk through. And, you know, I don't like tiggers and chicks. Chiggers and ticks. And I really don't like snakes. I mean, even black snakes I can handle. You know, green snakes, when we were kids, man, we picked them up, played with them. Kept him for a couple of days, turned him back loose, you know, but I just, and if I'm in nature, I don't mind a snake because I'm in his territory. Went down the watery passage a few weeks ago and the river was up a little bit, like I'm sure it is right now, and walking that elevated boardwalk they've got down there, two water moccasins. And I mean, they weren't the little small garden variety. These boys were like 3 feet maybe. Fat. And of course, when a poisonous snake, now here's a good one for you. If you're out there near the water and you see a snake, most poisonous snakes, when they swim, will inflate their lungs, which keeps them on top of the water. And so if you see a snake and he's cruising along on top of the water, his whole body out of the water, I mean, look like they're walking on water, but they're actually, you know, swimming on top of the water. It's really freaky thing to look at. But if their body is totally out of the water, most of the time, that's a poisonous snake. They don't like to get underwater. Now, if you see a snake and he's just got his head above water, and he's kind of that's your garden variety water snake most of the time. Now, although a brown water snake can look an awful lot like a water moccasin, you have to be careful. I don't know if you want to get close enough to examine the eyes on either one of them to see which one's poisonous and which one's not. But that's the reason you carry binoculars. You can see from a distance. But yeah, brown water snakes, they look a lot like water moccasins, but they're not. It's a little different pattern on the back. And like there again, the round eye versus the cat eye. The head is not quite as arrowhead shaped as a water moccasin. But anyway, yeah, two big old water moccasins down there. And that's one of the reasons I don't like the summer woods. Copperheads and water moccasins. But I'm not going out there killing them. But a lot of people you'll see, you know, they're out there on their land or hunt club lease and they're holding a rattlesnake. I mean, why? Yeah, you know, it's not doing you any harm. You stay out of his way, he's going to stay out of yours. He serves a great purpose. I need to get the Orion Society back on here to talk about it. And I've got some stuff over here in the pile of papers that I always come to the show with about snakes in South Carolina. You know, a lot of snakes, it's illegal to kill them. You don't realize that, but it is illegal to kill some snakes in South Carolina. So, but yeah, a lot of people go out and every snake they see is a dead snake. I don't know. Unless he's like on my back steps or something and my girls see him first and I can't relocate him, you know, then the kind of psychological effect has to take over and you got to make sure they feel protected and all that stuff. So, but I mean, snakes serve a great purpose. I mean, you imagine no snakes, how many rats we'd have running around here? And rats carry disease, people. Hence why when, you know, you see mouse dropping and stuff like that, everybody freaks out and goes for the Clorox. That's why. I mean, they're dirty animals and they carry diseases. And so anyway, where did I go with that? Trails to water moccasins and a watery to snakes. So look, I guess the whole thing of this is National Trails Day. We have a resource here in South Carolina, sctrails.net, which includes the Palmetto Trail. You know, that's huge. You got portions of the Blue Ridge Parkway that come pretty close to South Carolina. So there's no shortage of places for you to go out and get some exercise. There was in Lincoln at the National R3, 75% of adults spend their entire days indoors. Over 15 hours a day. And that's not counting the sleep time. That is the waking hours. The whole day indoors. Except, I guess, to go from your house to your car in the morning, car to lunch, car home. But it's just a society we live in. I mean, I do that on days. I don't get outside much some days. It's just a part of life. But today is National Trails Day. If you haven't been outside already today, it's not too late. Look, 47 state parks. Find one, go to it. Go to your local county park, somewhere in the city you live or whatever. Downtown, your neighborhood, get outside and walk. Any pathway, any number of steps can be a trail. So, and I just chewed up the first segment. Anyway, we come back. I got a little video I want you to listen to, and we're going to talk about the National R3 Symposium. Well, Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Hope you're having a good Saturday. I am. Always enjoy doing this show. Went to Lincoln, Nebraska for the National R3 Symposium, which is recruitment, retention, reactivation. And I spent two great days talking about a lot of things we can do to get people involved. Yes, in hunting and fishing, essentially. But we talked about a lot of non-hunters and non-fishermen and how to get them involved in conservation. And just before we went out there, a video surfaced from all places, NPR, heard on All Things Considered, a skunk bear. And it tells a great story about the decline in hunters and the conservation and who started it. Listen to this.
It's so beautiful out here, but someone has to pay to keep this wilderness and all its wildlife going. So where does that money come from?
A big chunk of funding comes from hunting and gun sales.
But these days, the number of hunters is declining and the debate around guns is raging. This old system is starting to look a little shaky, which makes you wonder.
How did weapons become such a critical part of conservation in America? Well, you could say it all started when a tree hugger and a gun lover went on a camping trip.
The year is 1903, and the place is Yosemite Valley. This bearded guy is John Muir. He was a passionate naturalist who had started the Sierra Club back in 1892 to raise money and lobby for environmental causes. He called hunting the murder business. Muir's unlikely camping buddy was President Teddy Roosevelt. Roosevelt loved hunting. He really, really loved hunting. And he loved wild places. In Yosemite, Muir and Roosevelt camped in cathedral-like groves of sequoias and at the base of Bridal Veil Falls. And when Roosevelt got back to Washington, he wrote, "There can be nothing in the world more beautiful. Our people should see to it that they are preserved for their children and their children's children forever, with their majestic beauty all unmarred." Roosevelt championed the idea that hunters should help pay to protect the wilderness they enjoyed. The North American model of wildlife conservation was born. More and more states sold hunting permits and then used that money to restore habitat and manage wildlife. In 1937, Teddy's fifth cousin Franklin signed a law that put a tax on guns and ammo and sent the money to state wildlife agencies for restoration, preservation, and training hunters. In this system, hunters are conservationists. They provide some funding and they help keep wildlife populations in check.
White-tailed deer are prey species. When they don't have any predators and they have good food, they're real happy. They make a lot of little deer, and man has to take the role of the predator around here, so to speak.
At one point, we were harvesting 15 to 20 adult does off here to get the population down.
Chip West gets his hunting permit at this gun shop. This season, it costs $39.50, and all that money goes straight to Delaware's Division of Fish and Wildlife. And he's got to stock up on ammunition. 11% of what he pays is collected by the federal government, then doled back out to the states. In 2016, Delaware raised $4.2 million from hunting and the sale of guns and ammunition. And some of that money went to protecting the nesting grounds of piping plovers, studying a threatened bog turtle, and lots of other programs across 60,000 acres of the state. Of course, there are other folks who work on conservation here, private groups and federal agencies, but state agencies do a lot of work on the ground, and their funding is starting to dry up. That's because baby boomers like Chip are starting to age out of hunting. Here's a typical age distribution of hunters from 1992. Lots of hunters in their 40s, controlling the deer population and putting lots of money into the system. Now those people have gotten older, and pretty soon they'll stop hunting.
We're not putting enough young kids in to take care of all this old geezers going out the other end.
When my gig is up, if you don't replace me with a hunter, where's the money going to come from?
Well, in the last few years, the decline in revenue from hunting permits has been offset by an increase in the sale of guns. All kinds of guns. Some people are pretty disturbed by this, that any aspect of conservation is tied to the sale of weapons. And no matter how you feel about guns, firearm sales are a pretty unpredictable source of revenue. So if you're going to preserve all this, who's going to pay for it? Some say it should be people who buy tents and binoculars. Others say we should all pitch in. because you don't have to be a hunter or a hiker to benefit from America's wilderness.
I just thought that was a great, we came in here and ripped the audio off the video, and real pertinent to what I spent a couple of days out in Lincoln, Nebraska. What, 323 of us spent out there. I don't think they had any idea that that many people would come, but it was a mixture of non-governmentals like, Rocky Mountain Elk Federation, Quail Forever, Pheasants Forever, Backcountry Hikers and Anglers were there, National Field Archery Association, some other brochures I picked up here. BHA, there was one, the Modern Carnivore, which is pretty cool. The First Hunt Foundation, Northwoods Collective, Hunt Rising, the Future of Humanity's Oldest Tradition. Just a really good time. And basically what the whole R3 conversation is hunter numbers on decline. Fishing numbers are up a bit thanks to high school fishing. Those kids getting involved at 14, 15 years old are now have to buy a license at 16 in most states, at least in South Carolina, to continue fishing their junior, senior years. And, you know, once you get them there, a lot of them stay. We were doing some research with Shimano and said, I can't remember which way it went, so excuse me for not having it exactly right, but either 60% of kids fishing in high school came from homes where neither parent fished, and 70% of them had never been in a traditional tackle store. In other words, they do all their shopping online, or the reverse. 70% came from homes where neither parent fished, and 60% of them never been. I can't remember which one exactly. And I could look back in my text and find out, but I'm just, on the fly. I don't have time to do it. So really good. And in the video, he talked about Delaware, how much money they got. Well, in South Carolina, and I think we brought this up when Cyrus and those were on the show, South Carolina benefited to the tune of $10.6 million on the Pittman Robertson side, which is the excise tax on hunting gear. And then from Dingell Johnson, we got a little over $4.8 million, almost $4.9 million from sport fishing funds. And in a lot of in the conference, a lot of the state agencies, a lot of their budget is from these two funds. And these funds, a lot of these funds are self-directed. I mean, they're you have to spend these on shooting ranges. You have to spend this on angler access and all. You have to spend this much on conservation research. And you heard him talk about the plover and the turtle. It's not just about white-tailed deer, turkeys, wood ducks. But anyway, R3, Backcountry Hiking and Anglers has a college program now. And they're going to college campuses. They are doing weekend retreats. They're forming clubs. And it's essentially, these are millennials, the generation that we all thought were throwaways because they don't concentrate. They don't do anything. Look, that's where it's going to have to come from. And a lot of them are doing it in these type groups, because it's all about the meat. It's all about where your meat comes from and, the healthiness of it. Hank Forster at QDMA is having just a fantastic time going to farmers markets, handing out venison jerky, because, hey, who doesn't like a piece of jerky? As long as it's not like raw or whatever, and starting a conversation. That's venison. I've never had venison. You want to try some venison? And they start, how do you get this? Well, you have to hunt because you can't sell it. A hunter, he can give you some. But it's that type of contact that we're starting to figure out is the way we're going to have to go about replenishing hunter numbers. But some great on the fence about fishing, a study of why anglers do and don't fish and what will get them out on the water. And a lot of it was talking about competing for time. How many of us have free time every day? How many of us have free time on the weekends? It's and maybe in fishing you're competing with baseball and soccer and movies and stuff like that. But on the hunting side, we had a big discussion in the Southeast Focus Group about this is not about trying to get somebody to hunt. This is about a lifestyle. It's a philosophy. It's a whole mindset. I mean, I've been doing this my whole life, and I don't choose between going to a movie and going hunting. I don't go to movies when I'm going hunting. Hunting comes first. Fishing comes first. It's a lifestyle. It's a mindset. And it's hard to convey that to somebody who's never had, you know, an inroad into hunting and fishing. There was a lot of talk about what to do about hikers and campers and, you know, should you pay an access fee? Should everybody have skin in the game? Or should the outdoorsmen and those that purchase the gear and all bear the full burden? Modern carnivore. Storytelling through video and podcast, blog posts from broad basic contributors, events tailored to the very early stages of the recruitment funnel, social media to keep awareness and conservation going, conversations going. You know, peer pressure came up in this. Kids and peer pressure. Peer pressure will make you do a lot of things you really shouldn't do. We've all done it. All of us are sitting there laughing, remembering. Well, you know, for me, it just wasn't one event where peer pressure got me. It was a bunch of them. You know, but peer pressure shaped a lot of what we did as kids, you know, the stupid things we did. And peer pressure can be a huge influence on kids who want to get involved in hunting and fishing and what kind of peer pressure they run into from their friends at school, you know, other adults. Eye-opening experience. And I got I took a ton of notes and got a bunch of stuff. It was some great speakers. Our own John Frampton, who was with the Department of Natural Resources for 37 years, was the CEO and president of the Council to Advance Hunting and Shooting Sports, which sponsored this. Aaron Mize from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service had a good chat with a guy from Eastern Montana. I think I might have to fly out to Eastern Montana and go sharptail hunting with this guy. That's part of the lifestyle thing. You know, when you run into another person that shares the same values, you're immediately friends, which is the really cool thing about being in the outdoors. I may come back to this in the next segment. I may rule on to something else. We'll see what happens in the next 3.5 minutes, where my mind goes. And hang on through the break. We'll be back with more Woods and Water South Carolina on the other side. Teacher, hey, congratulations to all those kids graduating from high school. Here, I guess this is the 1st of June, so here, either this weekend or next weekend or maybe last weekend, you had a bunch of high school graduations. So congratulations, all you kids. I won't tell you can do everything or anything you want to do. Look, I'll never play soccer for Manchester United, okay? I probably couldn't have, as much as I would have liked to have thought I could, I probably could never have been a fighter pilot. But you have talents and you have gifts. You know what they are by this time in your life. You may fight them, but go with them. You know, whatever you can do, do it to the best of your ability. That's the best advice I can give you. You know, I wound up being an accountant. You know, on one hand, I got the IRS. On the other hand, I got a bunch of clients. The proverbial meat grinder. But I've done it, you know, 28 years. And I'll clients, man, they're my best friends. I see them once a year. Some of them I don't even see once a year. I'm talking to them on the phone sometimes. But, you know, I do it the best I can. And it's been a good life. So the best advice I can give you is, look, whatever gifts you've got, whatever you can do, do it. And then play, you know. Anything you do will become a job after a while. Talk to some of these fishermen. It's a job. Fishing's a job. Got to make a living at it, you know? Got to worry about winning a tournament. Got to worry about getting a sponsor. So whatever you choose to do and whatever you are able to do, jump on it. Make the best of it and then use your free time to do that stuff that you really love to do. like hunting and fishing, camping, hiking. You know, that's the good stuff in life. All right. Like I said, I'm so 3.5 minutes ago, I didn't know I was coming back to it. I think I'm going to save a lot of the R3 stuff because I'm going to break it down. We're going to have some segments going through the summer about how to, but I was flying into to Lincoln from Atlanta. No, from Minneapolis. Flew from Charlotte to Minneapolis, Minneapolis to Lincoln. And I was beside an 88-year-old lady who lives in Lincoln. Her son lives in Minneapolis. Her daughter lives in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And we were talking, and, you know, they grew up there in Lincoln and outdoors and all. And, you know, the son's an attorney. I forget what the daughter did. I think she was in medical sales or something. But anyway, they had grandkids. She and this lady had grandkids, and she was just talking about them and all. And about, you know, them getting outdoors and all. And I thought, something hit me. And I said, you know, I got one daughter who's be a senior in college next year. I got one still in high school or be going into high school. And in 4 years, she's going to be off to college. And right now, when I go do things like last weekend, we went and planted, I don't know, 7 or 8 acres in corn and sunflower and brown top millet. And that's another story because, man, when your neighbors have like 4-row corn planters and you got plates for sunflower and you got a grain drill, you save a whole lot of money on seed. I'm just telling you. What used to cost me an arm and a leg, it's not costing me an arm and a leg anymore because it's really, the equipment's really nice. But anyway, Taylor was with me. You know, when I go to the outdoors, when I go fishing, she wants to go and I take her as much as I can and all. But you know, when they're gone from my house and on the weekends I want to go hunting or I want to go fishing and I don't have one of them to take with me, essentially recruitment is my number one job. Because at that point, am I doing it just for myself? Am I being that selfish with what I've grown up doing? Because I've done my job with my two kids. You know? So is it essentially those, when he was talking about those guys, the baby boomers who are now in their 50s and 60s, is it our responsibility to grab a kid or a family, better than just a kid, grab a parent and a kid or a whole family or a college guy, you know, who's living down the street, just got his first job and he's got time. What is it? 3 M's, motivation, mobility, and means, you know, that may be your target, but involve him and don't just take him once and drop it. Okay. I did my job. I took you once. Now it's up to you. Now, mentoring is more about a long-term process. You know, people ask me, you know, how do I walk by the hunting section, the fishing section. I see a guy up there. He's got this big old bass in his hand, or he's got a trout in his hand, or he's got their big old white-tailed deer or dove or something. How do I get from where I am right here when I have no contact with any of this stuff, don't know how to do any, to there? That's what a mentor is. A mentor takes it from start to finish, and the finish is when that person can do it on their own. So I'm really long-winded today. But anyway, if you haven't heard, Knoxville is going to host the 2019 Bassmaster Classic. First time in 49 years will be held on the Tennessee River. So, okay, whatever. Got that out of the way. That's one of those pieces of paper that's been hanging around forever. We lost an icon in the fishing industry. And a lot of people probably never knew who he was because like this article says in the very last sentence or very end part of it, because Ed didn't promote himself. Mr. Chambers did not promote himself and he didn't need to promote Zoom. And we're talking about Mr. Ed Chambers, who founded Zoom Bait Company. This was an article written by Ken Duke, for a fishing tackle retailer. And let me tell you what, if you have, there is no fisherman out there who has ever picked up a fishing rod and not thrown something made by Zoom. You just not happening. You know, Zoom is a, even guys on the professional level who are not sponsored by Zoom use Zoom. you know. I had the opportunity to spend a couple of visits down to the Zoom Bait Company where Chris Baxter took us around, showed us around, took us down to the old Zoom, which was the house where they originally started out, and then it added on here and added on there. And Mr. Chambers was there, and he started Zoom. Well, let's see if I can find it. Ed Chambers, he was 78 years old. A real icon, but it doesn't say in here when he started, but he started it in Georgia. You know, he talks about the red on the logo because they were in Georgia and red ink was really cheap in Athens. Oh, me. But anyway, in his later years after he, you know, got Zoom going, and it's just a cool story. It's at fishingtackleretailer.com, or you can Google Ed Chambers, Zoom Bait Company, and you can find the article. It's a really good article. But Mr. Chambers did not promote himself, and he didn't need to promote Zoom. I have no idea how many years it's been since Zoom had a booth at ICAST or AFTMA, but it's a lot. And the money Zoom has spent on conventional advertising through the years would be a fraction of what a company half its size spends in one season. But we got to spend a couple of hours with Mr. Ed Chambers on a couple of different visits. And, you know, his later years, he turned to working balsa wood crankbaits. And you'd go in the old, and there's just walls of a single crankbait with a specific color. And those were custom order colors. So when somebody would call him and say, Ed, I need, and he had this a lot, evidently, I need a certain bait that you do, and I need this color. And he'd do a color, send it, yeah, that's it, or no, change this. And he kept a pattern of every order he ever filled. I got a couple pictures of that wall. And the guy would call back up and say, I need this. And he had a notebook, notebooks everywhere with this. And he'd go back and find that. And he produced the same exact hand-painted BEC crankbaits. B. Ed Chambers. That's what it stood for, BEC. And I remember on one of our first ones, we spent a couple of hours talking to him. Because once you got him started talking, he just talked. And it was about conservation. It was about the fishing industry. It was about fishing trips he'd taken and stuff he'd done. It's just, man, I'm honored to have spent the little time I did with him. But he took his bait, told Chris, he said, take him back over there to the stock room and get him some bait, you know. So we got some BEC crankbaits, and they're about $20 a piece when you can find them, because there's only Simmons Sporting Goods in Bessemer, Alabama that sells them. He signed one for me. And I was looking at that thing the other day. I was like, wow. What a piece of fishing history right there on my shelf. So, Mr. Ed Chambers, if you've ever thrown a methylate trick worm, a motor oil, chartreuse, U-tail, man, you've thrown a piece of history. You really have. So, let's end it on a good note. The South Carolina Waterfowl Association is opening Boyd Camp in September. It's an opportunity for parents and their kids to go hunting and fishing down at the SCWA the Waterfowl Association camp, where Camp Woody's held. 8 duck hunts with 12 parents and 12 kids per hunt, as well as 5 deer hunts with 6 parents and 6 kids. The Boyd Foundation grant 60 acres of the 127 they contributed. So, very cool. Good news for South Carolina, man. We are just all about the outdoors here. All right, hang on. I'm going to get to a calendar of events and a couple other things. So more Woods and Water South Carolina on the other side of the break. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. I started thinking, it's been a long time since I sat here and talked for most of the whole show. Especially this year. I made a point of it to have a good guest list, and I've got them lined up for the rest of the year, too. So, but I just had some things I wanted to get, and I'm actually not getting to what I really wanted to get to. I guess you could say that. I wanted to say a couple things. The National Archery and School Program World Championships are coming up this coming week in Louisville, Kentucky. congratulations to all the teams from South Carolina who competed. Yeah, in NASP, you have your team, and you practice. You go to regionals, which is, you know, ours is held in Anderson, South Carolina. Then you go to state, which is in Sumter, South Carolina. And based on those rankings, you qualify for the national tournament, which is held in Louisville every year. And then based on your rankings in national, you qualify for the world tournaments. Well, our team, or my daughter's team, which is the Upstate Hurricanes, the high school team placed 16th at nationals out of 237 teams. And that's just the teams that made it to nationals. Okay, I don't have the statistics on how many kids shoot NASP, but the middle school placed 102nd out of 255. So both of them qualified. They're headed off to Worlds this week. Congratulations to them. We also need to congratulate a couple of fishermen on the high school. The 2018 High School Bassmaster All-American selection went through. And from South Carolina, James Gibbons from Timmonsville made the high school All-American. Little Britt Myers from Lake Wiley made it. Honorable mention, Jack Hunt from Townville, Kyler McKay from North Augusta, and Dalen Whaley from Abbeville. All those three were honorable mentions. Congratulations to those kids. Man, I tell you, between the fishing, the archery, the classic sporting clays, you got some really good kids. You got some really good kids that are really gonna make waves in the world. I tell you, when you talk to these kids, they are sharp. And you have to be, because they're being taught responsibility and decision-making at such an early age of life that most kids don't get. Okay. Man, I wanted to hit on the Yeti thing. I don't know if you've heard the big dust-up between Yeti and NRA. This is from back in March, end of March, first of April, middle of April. And I tell you, Yeti is still taking a pasting on this. But I don't have time to get into it and do it right. So I'm going to punt on that. But just know, do a little bit of research. And I tell you, if you really want the inside story, do look at Yeti's IPO history. And that's where the rubber meets the road, I think, in this whole thing. And some of you might say, well, Yeti's owned by two brothers who are big outdoorsmen and all that. Check that, too. You need to go back and look at who owns two-thirds of Yeti. And it's not the two brothers. It's a hedge fund, a private equity group out of New York. So I'll get to that because that deserves something. And then we got the Dix thing and all. And I think, four or five gun manufacturers have dropped Dix, so they'd never sell to them again. I think Dix is done. I don't think Yeti will ever command what it has before. Let's see. Got that out of the way. Can't even read my own writing. Okay. Check out the video, the skunk bear video. You need to look at it. It's pretty cool the way they did it because the guy is old pictures of Roosevelt and Yosemite and stuff like that. And the guy narrating is actually in the picture. It's pretty well done. I was really amazed that it came from NPR, but you know, you have allies where sometimes you don't think you do. Okay. Let's get to the calendar of events. It is brought to you, as always, by Visit Anderson Green Pond Landing and Event Center, which this weekend is hosting the Saluda River Rally, which is another thing I couldn't get to because of time. But there's the fishing tournament tomorrow. I don't know if you can still get in on that or not. You might can. Check out the Saluda River Rally. They're having a kayak fishing tournament tomorrow. And I don't know if you're too late to get involved in that or not, but anyway. Alligator season. You know, we had Jay Buffaloski on with us a couple weeks ago. If you're interested in the alligator hunt this year in South Carolina, the application deadline is June the 15th. So that's just a couple weeks out. Or you can apply online or the counters in Clemson, Florence, Columbia, Charleston. No paper applications will be accepted. So it's either online or in person. $10 non-refundable application fee. There's four units, Southern Coastal, Middle Coast, Midlands, PD. You need to have those. Figure out where you want to go before you apply. It is a lottery, so you will. If you don't get drawn this year, you will get a preference point. Yeah, lizard hunts. Woo! Did that once. Don't know that I don't know. I may do it again. It's just kind of their eyes at night. Okay, South Carolina Ag and Art Tour. This is a fun one every year. It just gets you back in contact with the rural part of South Carolina, with where your food comes from. This weekend, they're actually Chesterfield, Darlington, Florence, Horry, Kershaw. Next weekend, they're going to be in Chester County, Lancaster, York County. And what this is, and on into June, Fairfield, Newberry, Spartanburg, Union County, what this is you can go to these farms, and it's Ag and Art Tour. You can Google it. It's on SC Highway, which is a place I get some of the counter events off of. And you go to these farms. Firsthand where your food comes from. Look at artists in action, purchase works. A lot of these places have music going on. And reconnect with rural life, which is, I think, where a lot of people lose contact with how nature works. You know, that chicken doesn't come boneless, skinless, and bilo. I promise you there are no chicken farms around there where the chickens are all laying on the ground flopping around. Okay. And the certified South Carolina grown stuff is really neat. You need chicken to that too. Most of these places are, in fact, all of them are. But that is, you know, a certification process to go through in South Carolina that it's, you know, it's country farming. It's good stuff. You know, Saturdays 9 to 5, Sundays 1 to 5. Click on a name on the, you got a map here and a county and find out where to go. And hey, it's a perfect opportunity to take the back roads when you do it. Let's see. Paddle with the Ranger, Edisto Beach State Park, June the 8th from 10 to 12 and July the 9th from 10 to 12. Registration, you do need to register online. It's 10 a.m. to noon. All you need, sunblock, hat, sunglasses, water, shoes, clothes. It can get wet. Paddling supplies, everything you need, kayak, PFD, and paddle will be provided. That's at Edisto Beach State Park. Great place to go in the summer. Hey, we just finished up turkey season. But if you want to do something really cool, you can go to Hampton Plantation, which is where Archibald Rutledge grew up, and build your own turkey call. June 16th from 11 to 12, meet at the Ranger Station, insect repellent, sunscreen, water, snack, and work gloves. Event hours 11 to 3. And you can build your own own turkey call, which is kind of neat. June the 9th, the 5th annual inshore fishing tournament. This is at a Boca Hickok Marina on Johns Island. Captain's meeting June the 7th. Rules announced, they're going to have prizes, food, everything else, like a traditional captain's meeting. The tournament's June the 9th. Let's see, first, second, third place for each species, outstanding lady angler, outstanding youth angler. And this is cool because it's really limited. Redfish, flounder, trout, sheephead. And you can register all the way up through Friday, June the 8th. So it's not too late. Thepointis.org. I don't know. Yeah, the point. That's where you go. Thepointis.org/5th annual fishing tournament. Oh, man. I did not get a chance to get down there and fish this spring. I am just the salt. I need a refresher in the salt. Really good group down in the Lowcountry called Lowcountry Expedition, Coastal Expeditions. And this year they're running a bunch of summer kayak camps. Young Naturalist Kayak Adventure Camp, 23 years. And this camp introduces kids to the beauty of the Lowcountry, paddling from three locations. We go to a different destination each day, allowing us to look for fossils and shark's teeth, swim in the saltwater creeks, and search for dolphins and manatees. Ages 8 to 13. Then we got another one here, the Tidal Trek. That's Join Coastal Expedition's Tidal Trek program for a week of adventures as we explore the outdoors of the Lowcountry. Whether you're interested in hiking, paddleboarding, kayaking, or just spending your days outside, you've come to the right place. Tapping the outdoors and advance your skills in adventure sports, ages 14 to 17. And the Aquatic Adventure Camp, Shaka Surf School and Coastal Expeditions have teamed up for the Ultimate Folly Beach Camp this summer. From sliding in the surf on the front beach to gliding through the salt marsh on a kayak, your kids for summer. Your kids are in for a summer they'll not soon forget. So that's Coastal Expeditions. Got some great. And don't forget, you know, of course, Camp Wildwood booked up in January. I don't know where the Clemson YLI camps fell out this year, but they've got five camps across South Carolina. Camp Woody is going on. Coastal Expeditions. Glendale Outdoor Leadership's got some day camps going on. There's no shortage of places to get your kids outside this summer. What was that statistic? 2/3 of adults spend 15 plus hours indoors. 25% of adults live indoors, never going outside. Man. Unreal. But, like I said at the beginning of the show, that's just the world we live in. You know, it's a technology time-driven world. Time is money, and, you know, that's where it is. Let's see. What have we got here? I've been doing about a minute. Oh, wow. Not much time to spend going anywhere else. And no, we're not going to go there either. Okay. Well, kind of hard to waste a minute, but I'm sure I can do it. Oh, R3, National Trails Day. Got a lot of stuff going on. And it's going to be good. We're going to delve into this R3 a lot more, because it's a problem. It's not just a problem for hunters and fishermen. It's a problem for everybody who enjoys the outdoors. Simply because the funding mechanism is set up from the beginning on the backs of hunters and fishermen, not on hikers, campers, backpackers, photogs, birdwatchers. And so, you know, if South Carolina brought in $16 million from hunting and fishing last year through Pittman Robertson and Dingell Johnson, are the rest of you going to step up and fund that amount when we're gone? That's the question. And what happens to the wildlife, natural resources in the meantime? Something to think about. Hey, as always, make time to get out there. I enjoyed being here. Take the back roads when you can. Add a line, take binoculars, and never forget the camera. See you next week with more Woods and Water, South Carolina.